Okay. So verse 8, propelled by karma and inured to afflictions, the sufferings of all beings who share this same nature, I shall heap them upon the self that yearns for its own prosperity. Okay, so speaking about ourselves, propelled by karma and habituated to afflictions. You know, that's our life, isn't it? Okay? So the sufferings of all beings who share this same nature. So it's not only me that's like this, it's everybody else too. Yeah, I'm not the most important one in samsara. Yeah, yeah. Well, I shall heap them upon the self that yearns for its own prosperity. So this self-centeredness that's just thinking, me, 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 I want to be happy here and now, I want liberation, I want attainments, I. Okay? We're going to smother that I by taking on the suffering of all other living beings. Why? Because all these other living beings are exactly like us, you know, being afflicted by the negative emotions and disturbing attitudes and the karma created by them, being afflicted by their own self-centeredness. Okay? And these sentient beings have been kind to us. They're the source of our happiness. And so instead of seeing them as the enemy and paying attention, bowing down to our self-centeredness, we're seeing sentient beings as kind, wanting to work for their welfare, and seeing our self-centeredness as the enemy. And so then we're going to take the suffering of others and use it to crash down on our own self-centeredness and self-grasping. So this is where the taking and giving meditation comes in. Okay, so our self-centeredness, all the afflictions, they become this lump at our heart, and you can feel it sometimes. You know, like when you're in the midst of poor me, there's heaviness in your heart, isn't there? You know, we say, my heart is heavy. You feel it in there, yeah? So we're taking the suffering of others, imagining it leaving them and inhaling it, and it becomes this lightning bolt which then strikes and smashes to smithereens, you know, our own self-centeredness and self-grasping at our own heart. So it takes what others don't want, their suffering and afflictions, and uses it to destroy what we don't want, our afflictions and our self-centeredness. Okay? So when you do this meditation, yeah, there's a lot of instructions. I think many of you have heard the instructions on it before. It can also be very beneficial to really pray to your spiritual mentor, may all the sufferings of other living beings ripen upon me. Okay, there's a verse in Lama Chopin, the Guru Puja, yeah, that is about that. You know, where we request our spiritual mentors, please may all the suffering of others ripen upon me, and may I give all my happiness and my good qualities, my well-being, my virtue, may I give it all to other sentient beings. Yeah, so it's a very powerful verse, and we can see that it's totally the opposite of how we ordinarily live. Because how we ordinarily live is, if it's a problem, you can have it. If it's something good, I'll take it. And this meditation is the exact opposite. If it's a problem, I'll take it. And I don't just take it and sit with it and I'm miserable, but I use it effectively to destroy my own afflictions. And if it's something good, I'll give it to you. And I won't give it to you feeling like, oh God, I wish I didn't have to give. But give it because it feels good to give. Yeah. Leo was telling me yesterday, your brother is a neurologist?
Yeah, research
neurologist. And he was saying to Leah that there was a recent study that when people have a choice in an experiment to either do something that's altruistic or do something that benefits themselves, when they have the choice to choose, the people when they choose to do something altruistic, it stimulates the area in the brain that brings happiness and pleasure. And her brother was going, I wonder why, you know? Because evolution says it's survival of the fittest. So the more you destroy others and the more you glorify yourself, the more you survive, says evolution. Actually, what His Holiness says is the species that cooperate the most are the ones that survive. So it's not rivalry and competition, it's cooperation that enables us to survive. And so then you could see that if the people who do something altruistic, you know, even physiologically, the area of the brain that brings pleasure, yeah, it brings more pleasure, it creates the survival of the species. So it becomes a good thing to do. Yeah. So it's not only Buddha that said you can be happy being altruistic, but also science. Now maybe you'll believe it, huh? Science says so. Buddha says so, well, we're not sure. Science says so, oh yes, it's true. Okay. So then verse 9, when the craving of self-interest enters my heart, I shall expel it and offer my happiness to all beings instead. If those around me rise in rebellion against me, I shall relish them with the thought, this is due to my own negligence. Okay? So when the craving of self-interest enters my heart, okay, I shall expel it and offer my happiness to all beings instead. So instead of indulging our self-interest, we take on the suffering of others, use it to destroy that lump at our heart of self-interest. Within that open space, then a light shines forth that's the light of our loving kindness and compassion, and we offer our happiness to all beings. Okay, and that makes us happy instead of making us miserable. Okay, and so it starts out, if those around me rise in rebellion against me, I shall relish this with the thought, this is due to my own negligence. Okay, so when dear friends, relatives, people we care about, people we've been kind to, don't treat us very well, when they arise in rebellion against us, when they repay our kindness with criticism or, gossip or something, then instead of blaming them, we relish the opportunity, we relish the suffering, and we say, this is due to my own negligence. Okay, why do we relish this suffering? Because we realize that it's the ripening of our own karma. And this karma could have ripened in a really horrible situation of suffering that lasted for eons, some horrible rebirth in the hell realm for eons. But instead of that, it ripened in terms of people that we care about rising in rebellion against us. Well, compared to that suffering, okay, of being in the hell realm for eons, handling an interpersonal problem with people, that's a cinch, isn't it? Isn't it? Yeah? Think about it. You know, if we don't put our suffering in perspective, then when there's some problem, when somebody we've been kind to treats us awfully, like when you have kids and then they criticize you and, do their whole trip and think you're the cause of their suffering after you've been so kind to them, yeah, then it's so easy to go, oh, what did I do to deserve this? Oh, what did I do to deserve this? I created the karma through being obnoxious myself. Okay, what made me create this karma? My own self-centeredness, so it is due to my own negligence, because in past lives, or even this life, how we treated our own parents, we created the cause to be treated this way. Yeah. So instead of blaming others, We accept this suffering as due to our own karma. And when we think that we created this karma under the influence of self-centeredness, and the karma could have ripened in, you know, being born in a horrible rebirth for eons, and instead of ripening that way, it ripens in having difficulties with your teenager. Well, you know, that's really, that's easy to handle, isn't it? Yeah, or difficulty with the neighbor's teenager, you know, whoever you're having problems with. That's easy to handle compared to the self-centeredness. So it you know, putting things in that perspective makes us relinquish the complaining mind that always sees our own problems as so horrific. Doesn't it? Yeah. My problem. You know, as we spend this week together, you know, what do we get distracted by in our meditation? Does anybody else's problem distract you? No, you know? We don't care beans about anybody, everybody else's problem. What distracts us is our own problem. What are we spinning around trying to figure out? How can I work with this? What should I do? Should I do this? Should I do that? Am I right? Am I wrong? Which is this? Which is that? All this spinning. Whose problem is it about? You know, are you meditating about my problem? Are you obsessing about my problem? No! You know, you're obsessing about your own problem. How ungrateful you can be to obsess about my problem. Yeah. So I've often thought it would be very interesting if we had to trade problems and obsess about each other's problems. You know, it's like whenever you start to obsess about your own, you have to stop and instead obsess about somebody else's. Yeah. Wouldn't that be interesting? Yeah? Actually, it would be so boring. Other people's problems are pretty boring, aren't they? I mean, when you first hear them, they're kind of interesting because they're a little bit new and you try and figure it out. But after a while, they are so boring. You know, your friend just comes over every day, and the next day they whine about, and the next day they're still whining about the same thing. Every time, their same problem they obsess about. Ugh, you're so bored. But our problem? Oh, very interesting. We never get bored of obsessing about our own problem. You know, all retreat, you know, you'll pick one or two problems and just go around. Should I do this? Should I do that? Should I do this? You know, same problem, whole retreat. You know, then you'll come see me, you'll make interview, you know, appointment, you know. Oh, what should I do my problem? Should I do this? Should I do that? And then I go, well, I don't know. Then you get mad. You're supposed to tell me how to solve my problem. But if I tell you how to solve your problem, then you go, oh, I don't like that advice. Tell me something else. Okay, verse 10. When my body falls prey to unbearable ailments, it is the wheel of evil karma returning on me for causing injuries to the bodies of other beings. From now on, I shall take all sickness upon myself. So now we're about to embark in a whole set of verses which talk about a situation that's happening to us. In this case, it's my body falling prey to unbearable ailments, reminding us that this problem is the wheel of evil karma returning upon me. Okay, so it's the wheel of sharp weapons. It's like the boomerang. You throw out the boomerang, where does it come back to? Boing! I throw out my self-centered energy, I throw out my attachment and anger and dump it on other people. Where does it come back to? The result? Me. Okay? So it's the wheel of evil karma returning upon me. I created the cause for this situation. What did I do? The next verses in all the subsequent verses is telling us what we did. In this case, causing the injuries to the bodies of other beings. Makes sense, doesn't it? You know, when my own body is sick and, you know, unbearable pain, what did I do? I caused other beings that same experience. I injured other beings' bodies. Is it any wonder that I'm suffering? No. What's it due to? My own self-centeredness and self-grasping. What am I going to do about it? From now on, I shall take all sickness upon myself. So the remedy to do the self-centered attitude, think of other beings who are ill, imagine taking their sickness from them. You know, it comes out of them in the form of pollution. We inhale it and it becomes like a lightning bolt that strikes at the heart of our own self-centeredness and our ignorance, blowing it up, leaving that empty space, and then filling that space with light as we give away we imagine transforming and multiplying our body and it becoming what others need, transforming and multiplying our possessions and giving them away, and even our good karma, our merit, our positive potential. We don't keep that for ourselves either, but we give that away to other beings as well. Okay, so very powerful meditation. This book, and this verse in particular, marks the time when I really began to get it about what Dharma practice was. I had met the Dharma in July 1st of 1975, actually. And then I met it in the States, and then I went to Kopan Monastery, where Zopa Rinpoche and Lama Yeshe lived, to study with them. And in spring of the next year, around May of 1976, I got hepatitis. Okay? The kind of hepatitis that comes from when you eat fruits and vegetables that aren't properly cleaned. And I was so sick, you know. And Kopan in those days, I mean, now Kopan's quite nice, but in those days, I was staying in one building. It was maybe about three stories. Our floor was just wooden planks, so when you swept the floor, a lot of the dirt, you know, went down into the people's room below you, because the planks didn't always join together. You know, there weren't any bathrooms in the building. The bathroom was an outhouse that was around the corner and down the hill. It was the kind of outhouse that was a hole in the ground and two boards across it, one for each foot. You know, so at nighttime you had to be really careful. Yeah, you couldn't afford to not be mindful. Yeah. And it had a little bamboo, mat, some bamboo mats around the side, you know. So that was the extent of our toilets. So, you know, when I don't know if any of you have had hepatitis, but when you have hep, you are so weak. It's like you have zero energy. Okay, so going to the bathroom, I might have as well been climbing Mount Everest, you know. It was like that hard just to drag myself to the bathroom. So most of the time I just stayed in the room and hoped that my neighbors didn't sweep. and I just lay there. And somebody brought me this book, The Wheel of Sharp Weapons. And so all I could do was lay there and, you know, read and, like, sometimes turn the pages. That was the extent of my energy. Okay. Now, also, a very interesting thing, when you have hepatitis, you know, in Asian medicine, hepatitis is linked with bile, which is linked with the emotion of anger. So you tend to get very angry when you have hep. Okay? So you're angry. Who are you angry at? The people who didn't wash the fruits and vegetables, you know. You're angry at anybody, okay? It doesn't matter. They don't even need to breathe. You can still be angry at them, okay? So I'm lying there, you know, being upset, feeling sorry for myself, you know, and I come upon this verse, when my body falls prey to unbearable ailments, it is the wheel of evil karma returning on me for causing injuries to the bodies of other beings. From now on, I shall take on all sickness upon myself. Boy, was that a whopper, you know, that really got me. Because all of a sudden it was, why am I sick? Here it is, you know, harming the bodies of other living beings. What made me do it? My own self-centeredness and afflictions. Is it any use being mad at anybody else? No. What am I going to do? Taking and giving meditation. Okay. What else am I going to do? I'm going to stop creating that kind of karma. You know, and instead of injuring others' bodies, trying to care for others' bodies. Yeah. And it really changed my whole dharma practice, because until that time, I had always had the should mind, the mind that said I should practice dharma. You know that mind? When you're tired, it says, I should do prostrations. Or when, you know, just the mind that's, or when you're miserly, the mind that says, I should be generous, when you don't really want to, you know. So always like dealing with that should mind. When I read this verse and really thought about it, the should mind really decreased, because I realized that it wasn't a thing if I should practice the Dharma. Nobody was shoulding me. Okay? It was, I want to practice the Dharma, because if I don't practice the Dharma, I'm going to have more situations like this hepatitis. I don't want it. Yeah. So it really changed my practice from should to want. Yeah. Very important, very significant, because when your motivation changes like that, it becomes much easier to practice. Yeah, because you're not fighting an internal civil war, because you really see the benefit of practice and you really see the disadvantages of not practicing. Okay?